A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 172. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of ghost stories for Christmas. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, here we are. It's the season for a spooky story. And so appropriately enough, we're going back to that rich seam of BBC ghost stories for Christmas. And we're back in the 1970s again, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. We're looking at the last three stories from the 1970s run of A Ghost Story for Christmas. And these were the ones that were not based on the works of M.R. James. They were The Signalman from 1976, based on the Charles Dickens story. And there are two original stories, Stigma from 1977 and The Ice House from 1978. And we've talked about two of those in some detail in our last episode.
So let's get to the third one, which was in fact the final episode of this BBC Ghost Story for Christmas sort of series that ran from 71 to 78. This one, The Ice House, broadcast on December 25th, Christmas Day itself, 1978. About a 34-minute running time, Brian, I think.
That's about right, yes.
And it's the only one of the original series that was not directed by Lawrence Gordon Clark. We talked about him last time, and we've talked about him before. The director sort of most associated with this BBC Ghost Story for Christmas series. But here we have Derek Lister directing, and we have another modern ghost story written by John Bowen, who had actually already written for the Ghost Story for Christmas series because he'd adapted the M.R. James story The Treasure of Thomas Abbott in 1974. And he has another sort of genre credit because he wrote a strange ghost story called Robin Redbreast, an unusual story from 1970, not in this series, but sort of connected because the BFI recently put that out on DVD as well. So who knows, we may at some point be having a look at that.
Yes, that's right. I don't think that one was a Christmas time one.
That's right. I don't think it came out at Christmas, no. And I don't think it's seasonal, but it is it's got a strange, spooky reputation. So I'll be interested to see that at some point.
Yes, absolutely. Now, this one, The Ice House, featured John Stride as a man who was staying at this strange sort of hotel and health spa that's like an outdoor camp with several buildings where people are staying and so on. And it is run by a brother and sister who are rather odd somehow, and we don't know exactly what they are doing or why the other guests seem to be so quiet and reserved and rarely have anything to say. And we also don't know what is in this strange ice house. Why do they have an ice house there that they are apparently using for ice when they have lots of modern refrigeration there? What is going on in this ice house?
Yes, this is a very strange one. Indeed, we've got, as you say, this sort of old country house that's now some kind of health spa. We've got basically just the three main characters. The other guests, we see them. We don't hear much from them, but we've got John Stride and then this strange brother and sister who run the place. And in the grounds of this old house, they've got this building called the Ice House, and there's a decided mystery about what's inside there. And this one's quite weird, I think, Brian. It sort of played out in a very strange fashion.
Yes, it did. And there is one other character in there, which was an employee of the brother and sister called Bob. And he sort of fits in an unusual way, too. But yes, it's quite strange and unusual and not as straightforward in its storytelling as the earlier Ghost Stories for Christmas were.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's quite hard in a way to see where the ghost is and to work out what happens at the end, because let's say the ending is somewhat, how should we put it, undetermined, slightly vague maybe, Brian.
A little ambiguous, yes.
There we are, yes, there we are, perfect, ambiguous. So it's an interesting show, another very modern ghost story for the time. Very sort of, as I say, this atmosphere of something not being quite right the whole way through, and then this ambiguous ending to the series. So a strange one.
Yes, absolutely. So we should talk about this wonderful English tradition of ghost stories for Christmas. It isn't something that we really have in the same way in many other parts of the world.
Okay, so we, as you say, we do have this great tradition, probably cemented in public imagination by Charles Dickens and then later M.R. James, who we know would tell his friends and students a ghost story at Christmas while he was at King's College in Cambridge and later at Eton. So, yeah, I mean, that's the start of it all, I guess.
Dickens and James were both known for reading their work publicly. James, I think his stories were really written to be read aloud. Dickens, not as much so, but he was known for doing lots of public readings, and I think did fairly well on making some money from those readings. So reading ghost stories aloud and doing it as a sort of Christmas seasonal thing was something that was quite established or reinforced by those two authors.
And of course, we've got Dickens' famous A Christmas Carol, adapted for film and television many, many times over the years. And so we have this idea that, you know, ghost stories are something to do with Christmas. And then we get this strange broadcast from the BBC arts programme Omnibus in 1968, when the sort of very well-known writer and director and broadcaster and doctor, Jonathan Miller, does an adaptation of the M.R. James story, Whistle and I'll Come to You, black and white show with a very sort of critically acclaimed reputation. It was very popular with the critics. It was very popular with the audience. It's gone down in history as possibly one of the scariest things ever broadcast on television. And it seems to be that show in 68 that gave Lawrence Gordon Clark and Rosemary Hill the idea of doing Christmas ghost stories on the BBC. And that's what seemed to get them started, although it took to 1971 for the first one.
Yes, I think that's right. That was sort of the beginning with Whistle and I'll Come to You, which was something of a strange production. It had some wonderful spooky things in there, but it also had some rather odd bits of things with a lot of muttered dialogue and things like that, but definitely an interesting piece of work for the time.
Okay, so then we've got the first M.R. James adaptation for the actual Ghost Story at Christmas series, 1971, as I've said, and that was The Stores of Barchester, which we haven't covered yet, but we may get to at some point in the future. That one had Robert Hardy in it, I believe.
And this was, of course, as with Whistle and I'll Come to You, doing these M.R. James stories as they did for a number of years.
Yeah, the first five were M.R. James, and then these three that we're covering now, the last 3 years of the series, 76 to 78, where they moved to look at other authors and did something slightly different. Although, interestingly, after that, Lawrence Gordon Clark, of course, moved from the BBC to ITV, and he sort of kept his theme running because he did a sort of modern adaptation of the James story Cast in the Runes, which I don't think was broadcast at Christmas, but it certainly was set at Christmas. And we talked about that. That was a 1979 production, which we discussed way back when we did British Invaders 57 and 58.
Yes, and that was one that did a much more loose adaptation of the original story, where a number of these others, the Dickens and James stories, were adapted really quite faithfully. That ITV version of Casting of the the Runes was a much more sort of taking a little variation on things and changing quite a few things in it. But they did quite a neat job with that as well. It was very good.
Okay. And of course, they'd done, there's been other little odd Christmas ghost stories dotted around here and there, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. In 1972, Christmas 1972, the BBC actually had two different ghost stories because they had A Warning to the Curious, which was in this series of A Ghost Story for Christmas, on December 24th. And then on Christmas Day itself, on the 25th, Nigel Neal's The Stone Tape was broadcast. So we had a quite faithful M.R. James adaptation, you know, traditional period ghost story, followed by this very modern ghost story that was sort of one of Nigel Neal's reimaginings of how a ghost story would work, bringing science into things and ghost story and technology and the like. Interesting stuff there. In 2005, the BBC decided to restart this tradition of A Ghost Story for Christmas and did an M.R. James adaptation of A View from a Hill. That was in 2005. Then in 2006, they did Number 13, also M.R. James. So two more M.R. James stories coming out at Christmas time.
And they're also on the box set from the BFI that we've been looking at. Not on this box set, but also available on DVD. We've got Mark Gatiss, I think, showing his sort of his admiration for these Christmas ghost stories, doing his own version. And that was, of course, Crooked House, which we watched, or which came out in 2008. And we have covered on British Invaders a set of three linked ghost stories that ran over three nights at Christmas 2008.
And then in 2010, there was a new version of Whistle and I'll Come to You, M.R. James, of course, and that featured John Hurt.
Yes, John Hurt, who, of course, we've recently seen on our screens at the time of recording playing, well, a version of the Doctor, let's say that, so we don't give too many spoilers away, although I'm sure everybody's seen it by now.
Yes, indeed.
So, yes, another interesting production. They did something very modern. They changed it, perhaps not to everybody's satisfaction, but again, it's available on this box set from the BFI. In fact, all of these shows are now out on DVD, which is quite good. And we've got this marvellous now 6 DVD set from the BFI with 12, I think, ghost stories in all, plus several dramatic readings from different actors. There's a whole host of extras. There's introductions from Lawrence Gordon Clark. There's extensive notes booklets with essays about most of the shows. And all going for £42 here in the UK on Amazon. Quite a marvellous set, Brian.
Yes, it has some audio-only readings as well. It has a really quite extensive set of things. And if you're interested in hearing a podcast with a more comprehensive look at television ghost stories at Christmas time, go to Jim Moon's Hypnobobs podcast, episode 60. He does quite an extensive coverage of those there.
Yes, and we know that a lot of our listeners on the Facebook group particularly are also listen to Jim Moon's Hypnobobs, so you're probably familiar with him. And as you say, Brian, a very comprehensive look at the entire history of ghost stories on television.
What then do you keep in the ice house?
Ice.
The electricity may fail, a tree fall, there may be thunderstorms or industrial action. Our guests should not suffer on that account.
Our prices are high. Our standards must be higher.
Only ice.
How reluctant our guest is to believe us. We fail him, Jessica, in some way.
You are free to look for yourself. The door is not locked.
I thought I heard it bang the other day.
We should start to get into the good and the bad of these three particular stories that we've been talking about, The Signalman, Stigma, and The Ice House. So do you want to start with The Signalman itself, Brian?
Yeah, let's do that. It's very good. I quite like it. You have to go into it expecting this period dialogue because it really uses a lot of the original Charles Dickens dialogue. And that sounds a little bit foreign to us now. It's quite different. And as Lawrence Gordon Clark pointed out, that gives you more of a sense of it being a period drama than anything they could do with the costumes and the setting and so on. It really gives you that period sense of this 19th century ghost story. Does that very well, and that was something that I really enjoyed, was how it used that dialogue.
Okay, yes, it does that very well. Of course, we've got these two sort of performances, Denham Elliott and Bernard Lloyd as the main characters. As we said in our last episode, Denham Elliott, you know, quite in demand as an actor at the time, wasn't available for very long for the production, so I think it was quite a quick shoot. And Lawrence Gordon Clark did say in his introduction, maybe that lent a certain edginess to Elliott's performance as the signalman, because he comes across as a disturbed and unsettled man who is quite bothered by what has happened to him or what seems to be happening to him.
Absolutely. It was a very good performance from him, regardless. Both actors gave very strong performances. That was something that worked well in that.
We've got some nice looking camera work. Certainly the setting on the Severn Valley Railway looks perfect. You've got this very gloomy tunnel. They've got steam trains. We've got some quite spooky images. They're brief, but they're memorable. So all in all, it's a rather good production. And, you know, it's nice to see the ghost story for Christmas get into Dickens. And it produced, I guess, one of the highlights of the whole series, Brian.
Yes, it's definitely quite an unusual and unique sort of show. It really takes the source text, the source material to heart and really uses that, and that was very nice. You do get a lot of this sense of class distinction in a very 19th century way, where you have the signalman as a sort of working class type character, and the traveler is clearly much more an upper class sort of person. And you get this idea that because of that, the traveler has this sense of authority and he can say something good about how the signalman is performing his duties and so on. And the signalman accepts that as being, you know, something that has some authority to it and so on. So it's very much a class divided thing that you see in there, and very much from a 19th century and Dickensian type of perspective. So it's interesting to see that. It's a little bit different from what we're used to seeing in most other television productions.
Okay, so it definitely has that period setting, that period feel, and as you say, Brian, that sort of period dialogue, which may put some people off, and you may prefer something slightly more modern, in which case that brings us to Stigma.
It's interesting because it's definitely going for a modern setting and a sort of traditional type of ghost and ghost story in the tradition of the M.R. James things. And it was interesting how that was done. It was quite disturbing in what you see with the central character and what happens to her. I think in many ways it was really very well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a short piece, probably the shortest of the ghost stories. I think it's helped by the setting next to the stone circle of Avebury, which gives it that, you know, that sinister feeling, because we sort of bring to it some of our memories of Children of the Stones, so we're already feeling creeped out when we see those stones. the performances are very good. I think Kate Binchy's performance as the wife, Catherine, who's going through all this stuff, is quite terrific. And what happens to her is quite terrifying as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's much more modern, obviously, an attempt to do something different, but has quite a sort of spooky feel, I guess.
It does, yeah. I don't think the writing and storytelling in it is as strong as the M.R. James and Dickens stories that came before it. But for doing something different, the ideas in it, the visuals of the stones and the performances, some of the things in it are really, really very strong. It's quite good.
Okay, so that's Stigma, and that brings us to the last of the series, and in some respects possibly the weirdest, another modern ghost story, The Ice House, 1978. Certainly, I suppose, how shall I put this? As you say, Brian, the strangest and most ambiguous of these three particular episodes we've been looking at.
This is a strange one. It's a little bit hard to know what to make of it. The performances in it are pretty good, I think. And some of what you see from the brother and sister, the sister especially, you know, you have some rather off-putting behavior that gives you some interesting things in there. But the storytelling and the idea of what is going on in The Ice House and in the story is sort of a little strange and a little bit too ambiguous.
Yes, I mean, it has got this very odd atmosphere. The dialogue is a bit peculiar. The performances obviously go along with that. And as you say, they're quite good performances, but there's something very sort of odd about the whole thing. And then, of course, we've got this ambiguous ending. And I found this is the hardest of the three to get into or even to understand what's going on. And I can't quite work out if it's terrific or if it's just rather sort of vague and annoying.
It has a very good sense of atmosphere to it. The atmosphere, the strangeness of it, I think is great. The problem is the story is not clear enough, and the ideas and sort of what it's driving to is not really resolved very well.
No resolution with this one, certainly. Yes, it is a bit of a mystery. It's an oddball, and I'd be very interested to hear what people think about it on the Facebook group, and in particular, if anybody cares to explain to me exactly what was going on at the end, I'd be most grateful.
I would love to hear if there are any fans who are particularly big fans and really like The Ice House in particular. I would love to hear about why it is the best of these. I don't think it's the best of these, but I would love to hear why you think it's the best, if you think it's the best.
Okay, so I guess that brings us to actually our recommendations and us to pick our best of the bunch. And I seem to remember the last time we did the M.R. James three ghost stories, we both went in a slightly different order. We both had our own choice as to which was the best one. So, Brian, which one are you going to pick from this trio?
Well, from this trio, I think it has to be The Signalman. They did a wonderful job with this period setting and making it sort of live and work and have that wonderful, you know, slightly disturbing sense. And, you know, the payoff at the ending of it was done very well. So I would have to say number one choice is definitely The Signalman. I do like Stigma as well. It's definitely good. The Ice House, I think, is worth watching. It's not bad. It's just sort of strange and an odd one.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because that's exactly the order I would put them in as well, Brian. The Signalman is a terrific piece of television, terrific performance by Denham Elliott. And if you're looking for something creepy for the Christmas period, get this box set and check that one out. Stigma's quite good as well. It's short and bloody and to the point. And then finally, The Ice House, which I would like somebody to convince me or give me a reason to watch it again, because I'd like to know a bit more about that one. But at the moment, it's my least favorite of the three.
I think as a recommendation, I have to say that if you enjoy television ghost stories, Christmas time or otherwise, the box set that BFI has put out, we're looking at the 5-disc, but now there's the 6-disc one. It's a very good set. It's well worth it. It has lots of different stories that are spooky and have sort of different styles to them. And it also gives you a number of these dramatic readings that are done very well, and quite a set of extras, and it has things ranging from 1968 to 2010. So it's really quite an interesting set, and it has some great stuff on it. So I would definitely recommend that DVD set if you have an interest in television ghost stories.
Yes, the box set is absolutely a definite double thumbs up from us here on British Invaders. There's so much on there for you to enjoy. And as you say, Brian, if some of the stories are not quite to your taste, you'll find others that are. Loads of extras. It's one of the most comprehensively sort of equipped box sets we've seen. Quite a thing to have. So yes, do go and get it.
So, in summary, there was a television tradition of doing ghost stories for Christmas. In particular, A Ghost Story for Christmas series, which ran one story each year from 1971 through 1978, and had 5 M.R. James adaptations, doing all sorts of interesting things with those that were period set stories, and then went on to do The Signalman, which was also a period story, this time an adaptation of a story by Charles Dickens. And it featured this ghost story involving a railway signalman meeting with a traveler who was coming through, and the strange experience of things that he had heard and his paranoia of there being a potential train accident on the part of the line where he works and supervises things. A year later, they did Stigma, which was the first of their modern ghost stories. And it sort of took classic ghost story ideas that fit in with the earlier things they had done, but set it with a modern family at a country cottage alongside the stone circle at Avebury, and gave us a short story, but some rather intense ideas and somewhat disturbing things to watch there that are more graphic and gory than we would have in most of the others. In 78, they finished up the run of Ghost Story for Christmas for the 70s, and did The Ice House, which was also a new modern story that is quite different and strange and involves this sort of country health spa resort sort of place where people seem to be very much out of things and not talking, and we have these strange questions about what is happening in the ice house. And why does everyone seem so disconnected from reality?
Okay, so interesting shows and an absolutely splendid DVD box set. And we really want you to jump in on the Facebook group and tell us about it. And in particular, perhaps point out which is your favourite of the stories on the set. And who knows, Brian, we may be revisiting this box set at some point in the future.
Oh yes, could well happen.
And of course, do come back and join us next time, where we're sticking with a slightly ghostly theme, but we're going to the 1960s, we're going to do a bit of detective work and cover the series Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, a classic bit of stylish 1960s TV private eye type story, but with the twist, of course, that one of the detectives is a ghost.
Quite a fun little slice of the 60s, and it's taken us a while to get to it. It's quite a big, well-known show, but it'll be fun to look at that for sure. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there, along with some other podcasts, mostly done by people we know. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there, and we have plenty of fun discussion happening about things we cover on our shows, and about Doctor Who, and about a whole variety of things.
Yes, and you'll also find us at vognetwork.com, which is the Voice of Geeks streaming internet radio. We go out on Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll find many other geek-related shows and podcasts there, so do go and check them out as well, vognetwork.com.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, hello, below there, look out!